to the Alt Animation Podcast, the podcast that talks about the saltier side of the animation industry. I'm Josh Ryan.
Define the saltier side of animation.
And this is Robert Orndorff.
Yeah, I'm Robert Orndorff. Saltier side.
That guy's a salty dog. He's salty language.
He's an alt dog.
Language. It's like the grittier side, you know, with the more interesting stuff.
Okay.
People that are salty have a lot of character.
Well, I knew this was, you know, we're not going to talk about Disney and we pretty much don't talk about Pixar, but...
It's like the funk. If you don't know what the funk is, then you're never going to know. If you don't know what salty
is, then you're not salty. That's just...
We have an awesome guest today. Josh Burton, creator of the Morpheus rig, one of my personal heroes. What he's done, I think, is probably one of the biggest things that can happen in animation in terms of learning animation because, all right, kids before students, they had rigs, free rigs. Well, for the longest time, they didn't even have free rigs, so you had to make your own kind of stand-in rig. Mm-hmm. And they've always been kind of, you know, blocky or segmented, and they don't necessarily look like real characters, but they were used.
The rig being the sort of... skeleton of a 3D character that you use to manipulate.
Which I'm sure most people who listen to this would know what a rig is, yeah.
Wow.
But, like, okay, Pixar made Norman. There's a Norman rig where he's got a lot of facial features, but his body is segmented, is basic. You know, it's like, hey, if you can get character out of this guy, you can get character out of, an awesome rig and modeled character.
Yeah.
But it's gotten to the point where there's people that are so good that are using it for... whatever they want, you know, for their reels or for just practice, that they really can handle a better rig. And there are some people that want to get into animation, not to do physical animation, but to tell a story. So what the Morpheus rig does is it It lets people create whatever character they want, whatever scenario they want with multiple characters, and it's an amazing rig, so you get all kinds of awesome, facial expressions and... You know, there's so many features to the rig, like bendy bones and things that are in a professional rig. So basically what this guy did was he made the Everyman rig that they made for The Incredibles. He made it on his own and gave it to everybody and said, here, do what you want with it.
So this is like the guy who goes to the Olive Garden and figures out what the Olive Garden dressing is made of and then like publishes it so the rest of the world can just make it instead of paying for Olive Garden dressing.
It's basically...
terrible metaphor, but...
A better metaphor, I think, would be, the whole teach a man to fish and he can eat for a lifetime kind of thing. So he's basically teaching everybody to fish. He's not just giving everybody a fish.
So this is like animation philanthropy.
Well, exactly. Yeah, good point. I think he's a very altruistic person.
Yeah.
And I think
Did he make any money off of this?
No, he is just that good of a guy. Like, he... really genuinely wants to give something to people. I mean,
so he's independently wealthy already.
No, not at all. Honestly, he did mention that he does want to get his name out there, and what a better way to do that than having all these awesome animations.
What a better way to do that than being on the Alt Animation Podcast.
Exactly. So
talking
we got
about the saltier side.
So we got an interview with Josh Burton, and it's a really good one, but we're going to talk about a couple of other things just to kind of... Get across some of the new news.
New business. Right.
So, South Park got signed on for an additional 2 seasons. So now they're going into 2015. So there are 5 more seasons left. Which is crazy because... Have you been watching the new season at all? Or the last season even?
I saw... What was the last episode?
Oh,
I
man,
saw.
The last episode
I saw Asperger's. And I...
Okay.
I haven't seen any since then.
Well, like the season finale or the mid-season... finale, I don't know exactly what that's called, and the one after the break was all about how Trey Parker and Matt Stone, they have allegory and things like that in the show, but they mention, oh, well, we're getting too old. They're basically telling the audience, oh, we're getting too old, we don't understand kids anymore, we don't understand your music, we can't, everybody's
gorgeous.
So, everybody's so cynical online that no matter what we do, no matter the best show we try to make, and not even the best show, I mean, because they kind of... do it in 4 or 5 days.
Yeah.
But that's their thing, you know, and they're just about funny.
That's funny. I still see them as, I mean, just because of how short their production cycle is, I still see them as, like, punk, you know?
Yeah.
But they're saying they're not, huh?
It's funny, man, because on, I think it's on Audible, there is a panel with Brad Bird, Matt and Trey, and Dave Willis and Matt Maiaro, the guys who do Aqua Teen Hunger Force.
Oh, wow.
And so... you know, Brad Bird starts off and he's talking about how...
Are they literally sitting Brad Bird on one side?
Yeah, well, they're sitting in line.
Yeah.
So Matt and Trey are trying to pull the whole, oh, we're punk rock, we don't have hardly any animation, we take care of our stuff really quick, you know, we only have a team of five writers. And then Matt Mayer and Dave Willis are just like, dude, we just, you know, we just drink and smoke before and make this thing in, like, you know, a couple days, and we have us as writers, you know, like, you guys aren't the ones who are doing it on the cheap anymore or on the fly.
It's like three Billy Goats Gruff, like...
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Brad Bird gets up there, I do it this way, and then they get up there and they're like, well, we do it this way, and then the... Well,
yeah, that's and funny for the though, longest time, they were the guys that
if
did
you,
it
if you look at,
on the low brow. On the low end.
That's interesting. If you could sort of graph the things, you would see Brad Bird on income as the highest.
Yeah.
You would see Matt Stone and Trey Parker.
I don't know, man. It's probably cutting it close with Matt Stone and Trey Parker. They probably make more than Brad Bird, I would imagine.
Well, okay, what I meant to say then, I guess, was gross. Like, what, how much money their stuff has brought in. And yeah, you're right, they've had a lot more years, but yeah, I guess that's a good point. They're not perfect comparisons, because he does features and they do a long-running TV show. But I guess my point being that I forget, what was the other guy's names?
Matt Mayer and Dave Willis.
Okay, yeah. They probably make the least, you know.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So, I guess they're punk, but at the same time, it's like, you don't aspire to be punk, you just are punk,
yeah.
And then eventually, you're punk long enough that you aspire to be mainstream, or not mainstream in a crass sense, but you know, you seek to make it a career and a life rather than just a rejection of some other career
or an artistic venture of some kind. Well, yeah, it's really funny because Matt and Trey, you know, they were pulling the whole, oh, limited animation, and oh yeah, we hardly do anything, and then
they got
guys,
trumped.
Yeah, these guys just one up them, and they're like, oh well, all right.
Well, I mean, okay, so I, like I say, I've seen up to Asperger's at this point, they did one little thing in that one that I thought was weird, which was Stan's dad and mom got divorced, but then they got back together.
I don't know if that was that one.
Yeah, it was at the end.
Oh, no, yeah, you're right,
at the end of that one.
But that was continued on from the one before.
It was continuing.
And they were saying the whole thing about, I think they were trying to make it seem like Stan and his wife were kind of Matt and Trey, like, or even Matt and Trey.
Stan and his wife?
Or, Randy,
Stan's dad,
sorry,
yeah,
my favorite character, okay. Randy Marsh, is the best character ever.
He is kind of like the Homer Simpson of...
You were saying that the other day, he kind of out-homers... Oh, no, somebody was telling me that.
I didn't say, yeah, that wasn't me, but I don't think he out-homers Homer. Maybe he out-homers
he
Homer
totally
nowadays,
out-homers
but
Homer.
He doesn't out-homer Homer in his heyday.
Out-homer Homer.
Yeah.
Well...
Speaking of the Simpsons, though...
Okay,
so South Park now set up for 2015... the cast of The Simpsons had to take a pay cut to keep their show going for another 2 years.
What was the pay cut? Like $6 million
they
to $3 million
make,
an episode?
I think they make $1 million an episode each.
No, more than that.
Do they?
I'm pretty sure it was cut down from like 6 to 3, something ridiculous like that.
Well, either way, I mean, half. Agreed, you know, like they're still making tons of money, way more than they'll spend in their lifetime, but it's a sign, you know. It's a sign that the show's not doing the same as it is. It's interesting, too. I was listening to another podcast. I was listening to The Nerdist, where they were talking to Dana Gould, who executive produced the show for a while, and he mentioned that they went from a 3-act to a 4-act structure, and
yeah,
he thought that was a big part of
that's true
why it didn't have the same magic that it did in the Golden
Age. Well, because
when
Family Guy came out, everybody loved it, and so everyone.
You can say
it
out Simpson the Simpsons, but I disagree.
No, it didn't at all. I think that they tried to add a little Family Guy into the show and really took away from a lot of the great plots.
Yep.
And it was more of like, oh, hey, look at this ridiculous thing they're doing now. The thing that really drives me crazy about this whole Simpsons thing, though, is that really they're not losing any money. They're not. All that was decided was that the executive said, oh, we're going to have to make this cheaper. There's no indication that it's losing
the ratings
any more
were
money.
Down.
Not enough to warrant that kind of budget cut. And in that area...
But here's why I think the ratings are down on that show. Simple I think it's pretty simple. I think it's placement. And I don't know what if there's a better word for that, but I mean, look, who the hell is looking at the networks anymore? Who is, like, tuning in with their tuning box?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if Simpsons isn't on Netflix, if it isn't downloadable, if it isn't easily given to people the way that they're beginning to digest media, it's just not going to get seen as much. That may be, you know, I mean, we know the Simpsons have their diehard fans, like people who will watch till the end, you know, and it could turn out to be, but also there's so much great television right now.
That's what I think is the problem, is that there's so many other options
that are getting to you a lot easier.
Yeah, The Simpsons has become... The Simpsons, but I haven't really watched it all that often lately, just because it's not in
I have to admit, there was a time when I never missed an episode and I had seen every episode and I could quote every episode. Yeah. And that's just not, it's not the case anymore. But it's interesting to see, I've been alive, I guess, long enough now to see shows that were punk, you know.
Keep on saying that.
Well, but I can't think of a better word for just that attitude, because remember, The Simpsons was edge, when it came out, you know, and people, I remember my dad was, you know, like, I'd be watching it, and he'd walk by my room and be like, "Are you watching that Bart Simpson?" It wasn't The Simpsons.
Are you watching
the Bart Simpson? You know, because like that. But then, you know, but I guess what I'm saying is it's interesting to see these people who I grew up with, these characters and shows and creations that were edgy become the status quo and now something to perhaps react against, you know.
Well, nothing lasts forever, and even the best things, even the best shows have to end somewhere. I mean, you can't just keep on going and going. And really, they're the longest running show.
What if they were still doing Lucy? Like, they're all dead, but what if somehow they were like...
Digitally rescanned them and brought them back to life? Well, here's what I was saying. This is the
Lucy, you've got some explaining to do. Sorry.
Here's the thing that really upset me about this whole Simpsons thing, it will probably put me on some kind of blacklist somewhere, but I guarantee you that the aspect or the idea to cut executive salary wasn't even brought up. That wasn't even considered, which
it's like when Congress votes themselves a raise. I mean, who decides Congress's, you know,
exactly.
Pay Congress? So.
Exactly. But they're the least... they don't do anything for the show. They don't do anything at all. What do they do?
I mean, you know,
other than decide when to cut people's pay.
The Simpsons is a show that costs money. You can't make The Simpsons for free. I realize now that I'm the guy defending the executives. I don't want to be. But it's
what? Okay, what do they do that the producers don't do? The producers are the ones who handle all that. I mean, I'm guessing they do funnel the money in.
They are
the company.
The
middlemen.
They're the middlemen. They
cut out the middlemen.
You know,
take The Simpsons to
Fox
the
is a corporation. It's run by, you know, run really by one man, but owned, you know, I don't know. It's not a private company. It's a corporation. So my point being that somebody has to make sure that they're not giving money to Don Hertzfeldt. No, I don't know. So somebody has to make sure they're not giving money to something that's going to ruin them. In other words, you know.
I'm just heated up about it because I like to look at the Yahoo comments on the Yahoo News, which is a horrible habit I need to stop. But it was really interesting.
You're officially a troll hunter.
Yeah, exactly. I like that. Sometimes I can troll, but I try to be very respectful about it. I'm a very respectful troll. But with stuff like this, I mean, there's so many people, and it wasn't like a website like Cartoon Brew where it was animators. It was just regular people, and the main thing you saw in there was, whoa, these fancy pants rich people can't take, you know, a couple million less? Oh, wow, oh, big deal. Why don't I can do that. Hire me. And basically... They don't understand. Normal people don't understand. Hank Azaria, all those guys, that they are the characters. Mm-hmm. Nobody can do that. I mean, there might be somebody who sounds like them, but there's so much comedic inflection and
agreed.
So much, you know, timing.
I mean, there
that
were
they bring.
Whole episodes devoted to Mo Sizlak, whole episodes devoted to Chief Wiggum.
Apu,
those guys. Apu, that wouldn't have happened if somebody else had played those parts, that show would have gone in a different direction, and it probably wouldn't have been as popular. It was lightning in a bottle. I don't know that it still is lightning. I mean, you know, they're still there, and they're still, you know, the best part of it. I agree. I don't know. I agree with you. Like, this isn't very animation related by itself, but during the NFL lockout thing, when they were like, well, why can't these players just take, you know, like, yeah. Oh, okay, so the quarterback, he wants $40 million instead of $20 million. It's like, yeah, I see what you're saying, but he's not being any more greedy than the guy who signs his $20 million checks. Like,
yeah, who gets $100 million and wants 120.
Yeah. Like, it's like, I see where you're coming from. Yes, these guys, they have more money than they can spend, but the guy signing their check, you know, is 10 times as greedy as.
And don't get me wrong. I mean, it's business. Animate. You know, there's a certain level of business, especially mm-hmm. with television animation. That's what happens. If the executives decide, that's their job. The thing I think that really got me angry was, I mean, other than the fact that they're cutting their pay, which, you know,
well,
it's the fact that people don't understand and they don't give them the credit for that.
Ah, you know? Okay, I see what you're saying.
They're such an integral part of the show. And, like, even the artists, how much do you think those artists and the writers get paid? Probably nothing. Nothing compared to the executives. Yeah. And they're the ones who are bringing people what they, you know, the product. They're creating.
Well, look at the guilds and the Dr. Horribles of the world, and, you know, I look to them and hope that there will soon be a world where the internet can truly be the clearing house for producers and consumers of media, and there's nobody there to arbitrate on behalf of a self-interested small group of people.
And that brings us around to, and the reason why I'm so excited today. I didn't tell you I was excited, did I? I'm excited because
You're always excited.
I am. I just got done watching the final installment of Don Hertzfeldt's trilogy, or Billogy, as I like to call it, because it's about a guy named Bill.
Yeah.
So, Don Hertzfeldt.
Does he call it the Billogy?
No, he doesn't.
Did you tell him you called it the Billogy?
I'm going to bring it up tomorrow. So.
The next day.
Who thinks they have the worst question for Don? Who is the worst? They may have a really horrendously bad question. I think this person looks pretty enthusiastic about this.
Is it okay if we call this your Billogy?
That was a bad question.
You know, I like I was saying.
Have you seen Rejected?
Rejected. That's one of those ones where, like, you make sure to not tell anything when you show it to somebody. You're like, just watch this, you know? You don't say, oh my god, this guy is so crazy. You say nothing, and you just make them watch it. And that's how it was with me. And yeah, I mean, I have rarely been as blown away by something as Rejected. I love stuff that comes out of its own universe and looks in on the universe it was just in. You know, meta stuff, you know.
Well, and talking about the internet and community fund projects, I mean, he basically started off when the internet was coming, or he at least got his stuff out online, and it was distributed. It was like one of the first viral videos, or, you know, one of the ones in that era. All of his, like Billy's Balloon, Lawmore, all these ones that were really funny,
got
distributed on the internet, and that's how he became famous.
Yep.
And so you think, okay, why wouldn't he just start getting funding that way? Well,
right.
Because he's a traditional guy. He likes to do things like...
To me, he's... this is funny. I'm going back to a music metaphor or whatever, but... like, Kurt Cobain sums up Generation X on the music scene, right? Like, nobody sums up music better than... That. Really? Oh, not okay, well, anyway, my point being that, you know, there's this sort of polarizing thing. Don Hertzfeldt is the Gen Xer of animation. You know, like, and of course, it took a few more years for him to get big.
Well, I think he started his own genre. I definitely think he started, you know, he definitely went a totally different way that a lot of people are copying now.
But I don't think he intended for things to get as big as they did. I mean, t-shirts, memes, you know. My anus! this was bleeding. I don't think he intended for people to latch onto that stuff. And
why wouldn't he intend that? I'm sure that was probably in the back of his mind. He was hoping that would happen.
Really? I don't know what the guy's like, but I assume that he makes the stuff he wants to make and doesn't give a flip about...
Well, okay, he went to traditional film school, he wanted to make films, and that's his thing. Like, he wasn't an animator.
He seems like the kind of guy who wanted to make them for himself, and if the world likes them, great, and if they don't...
Well, and there's a certain level of that. There's some interviews where he talks about how he doesn't want to go commercial. You know, he never sold himself out to any particular company or never did any commercials for anybody, or any ads or music videos. Mainly, he said, just because he didn't have time, because he was doing his own stuff.
Yeah.
But he really thinks that it's helped... He said it's hurt him horribly, but it's helped the films, because it's, you know, he's been, basically the last 12 years, been cooped up making short films on his own. And so one of the things he said is that this is his last short. He's done with shorts, because he finished the trilogy, and he wants to go and branch out and pitch things and work with other people. Like, he wants to do something different.
He's coming out of the cave, huh?
Yeah, it was really weird hearing him say that, because he's
always... Well, there it is again. I mean, we're talking about, you know, punk going... you know, mainstream or whatever. That makes Green it sound Day. Dirty. That makes it sound dirty. I don't mean for it to sound that way. I just mean mature, you know.
Well, you know.
Go on to the next level.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we'll have to see what he does. But I have total faith in him, especially after seeing the final installment. Because, so he did a lot of, humor. You know, really hilarious stuff.
Dark humor.
Yeah, and he's one of those guys, or he did something that was totally amazing to me, which was... created characters that you really feel for and laugh at and engage in, all with very crude pencil drawings.
To me, he kind of reminded me of Bill Plimpton in the way that I was repulsed and attracted at the same time, the whole way through.
Well, and it's amazing how both of them get so much, you know, visceral, guttural emotion from you with just simple line drawings. Absolutely, I totally agree with you on that. I mean, the guy, I think, is a genius. And then he took it to another level by making short films that not only were funny, but also deep and meaningful and thoughtful. And he proved that not only could you engage in a character with that type of style, you could also tell a compelling story, which is amazing. Like, not that many people have shown you can do that.
Yeah.
And he did it. No problem. Well, not no problem. I mean, it took him forever. But he did it, you know, really his first try.
Yeah.
And the other cool thing about the screening was I was really excited to be able to see all
of them. How many people were there?
Oh, he sold out two nights, basically, at the Alamo, which is a full theater.
Which one? Lamar?
South Lamar. And he's taking it on tour, which he's done for most of his other shorts, too. He usually goes on tour after each one, and especially with, like, the animation.
What was the crowd like?
You know, man?
I could see it being totally, like... just the wrong group of people. Somebody who heard that
people who went to it had to buy tickets.
People with creased pants who crossed their legs when
elbow patches.
Yeah, I could see that, man. Like, oh no, I've always loved Don Hertzfeldt. You know, like
There was a couple people there, and in fact, you know, it was sad because whenever the first couple ones played, people clapped and enjoyed it, but it wasn't like that. You know what I wanted to do, which is like, hell yeah, all right, Don Hertzfeldt, like, way to go, man, good job. And I really wanted to, like, encourage other people to, like, get into it, but it was, like, a very hoity-toity film crowd, which was like, that was good. I appreciate that film. I appreciate it.
Austin Film Society crowd or something?
Yeah, which is funny because they were having a screening right next door for some documentaries, so some of them might have bled over. Who knows? But another thing that he said which really threw me off, which was he started doing some digital in this last film, which he's always been a staunch opponent against. Or not opponent, but he never wanted to do it for himself.
Yeah, no, I mean, that was one of his trademarks was, you know, I won't touch that stuff.
Yeah. I don't want to give any part of the movie away because you really need to watch it. Oh, yeah, so what I was saying earlier is that it was really cool to see them in a theater with people, and the way that he makes his movies, or at least these new shorts, the Bilogy, is he creates little frames, like circle frames.
Uh-huh.
So I was sitting in the back, so it looked like flashlights from the back were shining and revealing different parts of the story. So it was really cool. But I wanted to see them played all in order, and cause he didn't make them to do that, so I really wanted to see how that played out. But he spread them out between other stuff. And he mentioned afterwards, like, I don't know how these are going to play in order. I'm going to try it later on, but I didn't want to do it tonight. So that was really cool. I really enjoyed seeing him again. I got to meet him before. Got my DVD signed, so hopefully you guys will be hearing from Don Hertzfeldt on this podcast. Awesome guy. Oh, by the way, he's having a tour of the film, So if you get a chance, look it up, buy tickets, go and see him, and talk to him, and get him to sign your DVDs, because they might be worth something. Or, just as a collectible.
Yeah, and say, you can tell your friends, yeah, he signed this before he sold out, now he uses computers and makes movies.
Yeah, yeah. Well, one of the guys that's on his thanks, always on his thanks, is Shane Aker, who's the guy who made that short film 9, which was turned into the feature film with Elijah Wood. So, I don't know, I'm kind of speculating considerably right now, but it might be a partnership there in terms of feature films. I don't know.
Well, this is probably, yeah.
Yeah, this is a good...
I'm sensing this is interview time, am I right?
All
right,
I guess it's time to play the Josh Burton interview. He's the creator of the Morpheus rig, so listen, enjoy, and look him up online because he's got all kinds of resources for the rig. And he's an awesome guy. He responds to people online, so I'm sure if you are interested in asking him any questions, he'd be more than happy to respond. Unless they're questions he has already answered online, which he's made very clear that he does not want to keep on re-answering those all the time. So please...
Yeah, what's a rig? What is animation?
Don't ask him any of that. Or, I don't know.
What's a computer?
That might be something he would answer, because there's not many questions asked. So listen to the listen to the interview, and we'll get back to you after that.
Me too.
Okay, well, I'm here with Josh Burton, who's known, I guess, mainly for being an animator, but I would say you're known worldwide for the creation of your rig, Morpheus, which, I mean, I'm going to try my hardest not to make the whole interview me just thanking you for making Morpheus, because, you know, a lot of us started off, well, first, say hi, Josh.
Hi, I'm Josh.
All right, you know, for a while, us, you know, starting animators and, you know, student animators in general, you know, there's free rigs out there, and there's some good ones, there's really good ones, but in terms of a production quality rig where not only, you know, you have a decent set of facial motions and you know, decent controls to use, your rig is different because you can actually customize it. Now, I guess, tell me the process of making that let's start off first from scratch. How did you get into animation? When did you start falling in love with it, I guess?
I've loved animation all my life. When I was a kid, I was in art classes. I took all the art electives in high school, did AP art, and went to contests to do drawing and stuff.
And where was this at?
Oklahoma.
Oklahoma, okay.
Bethany, Oklahoma. And when I graduated, actually... I decided to go to the Marine Corps, and I spent 4 years in the Marine Corps.
Oh, wow.
And I was the art recruit in boot camp, so I painted our platoon flag, and I did drawings and stuff for drill instructors.
That's amazing. I had no idea.
Drew tattoos for buddies and
cool.
things.
Cool.
Yeah. And then got involved with I got stationed in D.C., and I got involved with a church there and was doing some artwork for them and started getting the Lightwave and getting back into 3D and still drawing and whatnot. And then when I when I finished my enlistment, I wanted to do animation. So I started off the Art Institute in Washington. I did a couple semesters there and then decided to transfer to SCAD, Savannah College of Art and Design.
Yeah.
And so went there and I learned the basics of animation and filmmaking and made a lot of great friends and started making films.
Very cool. So before that, I mean, before using Lightwave, did animation even, did you consider it?
I worked at a software company in high school, and actually I dated a girl in high school. Her dad was an art professor at college, and so he got me Photoshop and Illustrator, and I got started with that, but not really animation there.
Okay.
Did a little true space work in high school, which was terrible. You know, wait 3 days for a render and it'd be corrupt, and it was a bad experience. But before that, not really. I drew cartoons, but I hadn't really done animation till SCAD.
Now, you're one of the people, the very rare few people that is very technically savvy and also creatively savvy too. And I noticed on your website one of your things that you specify yourself as is a storyteller. Now, is that something that you were interested in before even getting into animation? Is that something you wanted to do, filmmaking and things like that? Or?
Well, you know, I've always loved stories. I'm a huge reader. I read a lot of books.
Gotcha.
Fiction mainly, and I just love story. And I really like characters, and so I've always liked just made up characters and whatnot. So getting into 3D for me was a great experience, and just being able to take something, an idea, to paper into 3D, and then to put controls on it so I can move it around. And it's just, that's what I love about the process. The actual animation I enjoy, but having done it for a while, I actually get more pleasure now as seeing what other people do with those characters. So, you know, I did a test animation with Morphe a couple months ago, and I spent 3 weeks on it. but you know,
and that's the one with the three the three pirate guys, I guess, kind of.
So I you know, I did that, but by providing a rig for other people to do it, you know, people have done minutes and minutes and minutes of footage with that character, and I enjoy seeing what they do with them, what they come up with, and it's just a lot more than I could do myself, and I like enabling other people to do stuff.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, if you, I don't know, it's really crazy for me to see all the people that are using it now, you know, and it must be amazing for you to see something, you know, to be a part of that, you know, so many people learning how to do animation and having the tool to be able to tell stories now, because you really couldn't tell a story with the rigs. You could animate, but you couldn't tell a story. And with your rig, people can make whatever they want.
Yeah, I mean, it was an experiment, you know. I had a lull, you know, I'm a freelancer, and so I was trying to generate work, and so I made Squirrely a few years ago after I left Midway, and I got some jobs from that, and then I worked a little bit, and I was like, you know, I really want a human character that I can make whatever kind of film I want, whatever kind of shot I want with. I want a fat guy, I can do a fat guy. If I want a big guy, I want a big guy. And I want to use the same rig, because one of my frustrations with, you know, trying to pull different rigs from different places is they all have different controls, and I'm like, I don't want to learn every, like, if I can hit this pose with this character but not with this character, that's frustrating.
Absolutely.
And so I wanted to see if I can make something like that I would want to work with. And so that's kind of how Morbius came to be.
Well, there's so much stuff I want to talk to you about, but in the interest of time, I guess we'll just kind of talk about, you've worked at PSYOP, you worked for PSYOP,
yeah.
You worked for Moonbot doing more Less More Animations, a bunch of other ones. Any other ones, the big name ones that you worked at Midway for a while?
This last year, I started off at Midway out of college, and I did a little bit of freelance on the side, and then I left Midway right before they went belly up, and started freelancing, and did several projects with PSYOP, like you mentioned, and this year I started working with actually a company out of Houston. I didn't know they existed, and they contacted me, and so I've done several projects with them. I did the Nintendo gig. I don't know if you've seen that.
No, I haven't yet, no.
It's the Nintendo E3 projection project.
Oh, very cool.
They put their 3DS as part of their stage demo.
Okay.
So, I led that project, co-directed with a really good friend of mine, and had some friends work on it.
Wow.
So I got that through the studio in Houston. I did a thing for Animal Planet for them.
Very cool.
Several other game projects. I'm working on a game project right now for a company in Australia, and I'll be on that through December.
So would you say the freelancing has, you know, given you the opportunity to do more of what you want to do, which is storytelling?
Yeah. Well, I mean, what I really like doing is making characters, and so for freelancing for me is the opportunity to have work and to have time to work on other things. So
yeah.
This year I started working on a rigger, and so that's what I've been working on in my spare time. So I've been learning Python and making the tools I need to make Morpheus 2.0 and to make other things. So it's, you know, I love the setup machine, and I actually use John Doubleseed as a guy who was in college to me, his rigger, to do the base of Morpheus, and then I put my own stuff on top of that.
Okay.
But they're kind of limited his is limited to a biped rig, and the setup machine kind of stopped development. And so there's things that I want, newer techniques that I wanted to be able to use that just weren't out there. So I'm making my rigger so I can do those things. So if I get a lobster, I can rig a lobster. If I get a dragon, I can rig a dragon.
Very cool.
And it'll all be the same kind of control setups and whatnot. And so it's a known entity.
And so you get that desire to create a character out of, you know, being able to make the possibilities of this character or what the possibilities of this character moving are. You get that satisfaction from it as opposed to animating 100%.
Yeah. Okay. Right. I mean, even if it's not my design, I like bringing something to life. Like the project I'm working on right now, I'm doing some fun facial rigging stuff that I hadn't done before, because they're different kind of character types. And so just, I guess, coming from an animator experience, I think that helps me as a rigger to know I would like to work with this kind of control. I like the way that this feels when I move this, and I don't have 15 things to do if I have maybe two or one.
Yeah.
So I try to bring that into my rigging.
Now, that's one thing I've absolutely noticed with your rigs, because, I mean, I've used your, I'll be honest, I haven't gotten to do a whole lot of animating with Morpheus, because every time I use it, I spend all my time making new characters and just over, you know, making a new guy that looks like that or looks like that. It's very addictive, absolutely. So But as terms of animating, that's one thing I have noticed is that it seems like an animator rigged this. And you don't really get that a whole lot with other rigs, especially, you know, if you're working for a company or something. You know, a lot of the rigs are, they're friendly in ways that are friendly to the pipeline, but they're not friendly to the animator. And that's one thing I really appreciate about your Morpheus rig. And other than, of course, you distributing it for free for everyone to use, did you have any thoughts about, you know, making it a... you know, something people need to pay for? Or?
Well, I mean, yeah, of course I had the thought. But, yeah. But I mean, there's a lot of, like, once it's out. And there's really not a good way to keep it from getting out. I mean,
yeah.
Like, Animation Mentor has their rig, and, like, no one's supposed to have it, but Animation Mentor students, but everyone has it.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
So it's just, like, you can't control that. And so why try to fight that? And so... by letting people use that and to find other ways to make a living. And, you know, honestly, just the goodwill that gets. I mean, I get a lot of work from that, so I get people contacting me for jobs. And they're like, oh, my animators use Morpheus, and they love it. Can you look at rigging this? And those are the kind of projects that I get. And so it's planting seeds for future work.
And another cool thing that you've done that I think is amazing is that you've made it very... Josh is getting a pizza right now, if everyone's listening. Okay, so one of the things I think is also awesome about it is you've made the rig to where people can build on and change. You can add stuff to it. You've made awesome scripts that allow you to make your own blend shapes, to even use your system of making your own blend shapes for your own characters. You didn't have to do that. Why did you?
Because I think that one of my frustrations is animators who don't understand how to do things.
Yeah.
And so if I can teach someone how to do that, it saves me having an answer email on how do I do this, and also just in pipeline, I think it's important that animators have basic skills in troubleshooting. And like, you know, like especially in commercial work, a lot of times animators they're expected to be able to do some things, like to set up lattice tremors and to make things work, because you have such a tight timeline a lot of times that you really can't send it to a rigger to say, I need this kind of setup. It's a make this work. And so just, I mean, basic blend shape understanding is important, just basic workflow things. If I want to do this kind of thing, how would I do that?
Well, and you're being modest, but you do also go on 11 Second Club all the time and answer questions that people have, which is also another thing that's very nice of you to do. I mean, you know, there's definitely some questions where you try, you know, to push people towards other materials, but you're very helpful and you're very, you know, you're definitely giving back to the animation community in so many ways. And yeah, there's, can't thank you enough, especially for that, absolutely.
Well, you're welcome, but I mean, it was done for me, and so I think it's important to, you know, doing others as they do unto you. And so I had a lot of people, you know, as I was getting into this, they would answer my questions. I, you know, email people that, you know, they'd know, I'm sure they were very busy, and a lot of times they'd answer my questions. And,
yeah.
You know, as a rigger, it's important to be responsive when you can to animators. I will say that, you know, it is frustrating sometimes to get the same question over and over and over, and you try to say, okay, this is a frequently asked question, so please just look here.
Yeah.
But, you know, not everyone's going to do it.
Well, I mean, you have tutorial videos online and multiple documentation, so anybody who wants to do anything with Morpheus or use it to do something even better, they have the tools. And what, now you brought up that you use Morpheus for that one shot where you know, and it's extremely well animated, the three characters that you did.
Yeah.
It's awesome. I love it.
Thanks.
The one question I wanted to ask you is, you have that on the front of your reel. Now, is that because you're proud of Morpheus, you're proud of your animation, or is it because you think that's the best, the strongest shot you have? Because usually, you know, in a demo reel, traditionally, most people put the most, the highest profile work that they've done, which you've done a lot of high profile work.
Yeah.
And it's really, you know, interesting to see that you chose your own personal project to be the front of your reel. What was your thought process behind that?
Honestly, it was lip sync, and because the way I edit my audio and my lip sync, or in my demo reel, I didn't want to have to come in and out.
Ah, gotcha.
Or coming down from the music to come back up for the audio. And, I mean, the reason I use Morpheus is because I wanted to show off the rig as well. And,
yeah.
You know, it's awesome to see what some people do, but I wanted to encourage people to push it, and so I kept seeing the same, like, just cookie-cutter Morpheus on, you know, entry after entry in 11 Second Club, and I was like, okay, how could I encourage people to try something else? And so I'm like,
yeah.
Okay, I'm going to do four very different Morpheuses, and I'm going to animate it, and then I'm going to let them have those to start as a base for a new character, and so that's what I did.
Well, I mean, it's definitely a beacon of here's what you can do, with this, go ahead. And, you know, it only has been out for, what, a year now, right?
Or last December is when it came out. I was in beta last fall.
So not even that long at all. So, I mean, there's really the best stuff is yet to come. And it's exciting to see, you know, and it's, I bet it's exciting for you to be a part of that.
It's so exciting. I mean, especially exciting when I watch an 11 Second Club entry and I'm like, I can't tell for sure if that's Morpheus, but I think it is. Those are my favorite entries, especially if they're really well animated, of course. But,
absolutely.
You know, but just to, I like to see how people push things. You know, I started a Best of Morpheus and Mayo channel.
I've seen that, yeah.
That people can check out. And I do a Best of Post every month. It's just stuff I find that people send me or I find, you know, Googling or whatnot. And I just like to see what people do.
Well, and the possibilities are endless, and that's one of the great things about the rig and about, you know, the entire concept behind it is that you don't have a rig anymore. You have characters, and you have people that you can pull and use and change and even tell a story about a character changing, you know, and you can do all of that with it, and that's just something that you couldn't do before, and now everybody has the tools to go out and do it. And I think not only are you helping animators, but you're helping people that would be future storytellers or future, you know, a story artist even. You could use your rig to do a storyboard quickly and easily. Absolutely. So yeah, just can't thank you enough for that. So I don't know what. Growing up in Oklahoma, there probably wasn't a whole lot of animation at that time, right?
Well, I mean, I love the Disney films, and I always go see them and whatnot. But I mean, 3D animation wasn't really in its own while I was a kid. You know? I remember watching The Great Mouse Detective and the clock tower scene and just being like, how did they do that? And that was really my first experience of seeing like what really 3D animation was. They did a little bit of All Our Own Company with the cars and stuff. But I would watch those specials on the Disney Channel when I was a kid, and I was like, okay, so what is this stuff they're doing? And you know, I got, like I said, in the high school, I got into True Space, and I started doing some basic modeling, spaceships, and, you know, just really basic stuff.
Yeah.
But I wasn't at a level yet where I could, you know, take my drawings and make them 3D. And that took a while to get to.
Now, one thing that's interesting to me about you is that you could, if you wanted to, you could work in a lot of big name studios as a full-time guy. But yet you choose to stay in Houston as a freelancer. You know, is it because you like to be able to pick and choose, or do you love the city, or?
Well, I'm actually new to Houston. Houston's a fine city. It's not my favorite city I've lived in.
Uh-huh.
That would actually probably be Austin, where we are
now. Cool.
You know, I'm married, and my wife has a great job in Houston, and the economy has just been really, you know, shady. And so, you know, I got friends that are losing their jobs right and left, and I'm not sure about their jobs, and you know, just for the sake of, my wife has a very good, secure job, why would I ask her to leave a great job so that I can, you know, follow a dream working at some studio? And I really enjoy doing this, so it's really been the experiment of, like, can I make a living doing this freelance? And so that's what it is. I can't ask my family to leave what's secure for me to follow a dream when I can do this on my own.
And so, I mean, you feel like you are being as successful as you could be in terms of...
Well, I mean, I think you have to qualify what success is. If success for you is to work on a major feature film, then no. But that's not really my dream. I love what I do. I love making characters move. I love the rigging process. I love 3D. And so I can do that, and I can work on other people's projects to make some money, and I can work on my own stuff and my friends' stuff to have fun. And to learn. And so I enjoy my life. And so, no, I don't get to work on, you know, at Pixar or at Blue Sky or some place like that, or on this game project or that game project. You know, I get those calls, and it's hard to turn them down sometimes, but it's a quality of life decision that, you know, what do you want out of life? Do you want to just work at a place, or do you want the life that you want? And so...
So if you could change anything about what your whole situation, your setup, would you change anything? I mean, would you do anything differently?
I do miss working in a studio. I mean, working next to friends and having someone to look over my shoulder or to look over their shoulder and say, hey, look at this. But I had that to a small degree. You know, I got some really good friends. One of my best friends, David Boxer, he's in L.A., and I partnered with him on the Nintendo project, but we talk, you know, several times a week, and we talk, you know, rigging, and we show each other our work, and I have several friends that I can do that with. But I guess if anything, if I could have a studio to work in, I would really enjoy that. But for now, you know, you have to make choices in life, and this is one of the choices I'm making.
Now, it does seem like you're a very self-starting, you know, self-motivated person. and you know, it's really cool to hear that you have people that you talk to and that you work off of. How important is that for you to get that feedback and that you know, that camaraderie, I guess, to you being successful? Do you feel like it's more or less?
I think it's vital. I think it's the difference between having a happy life and a depressed life. We need friends. We need people we can share our work with and share our lives with. And so I think having, you know, friends who have your same passion is vital.
So in, you know, 5-10 years, do you see yourself doing anything different? I mean, would you want bigger roles on certain projects? Would you take a bigger role that was a temporary project? Or,
you know, it depends. Like, it's important to me to have a family, and so that's something that my wife and I are, you know, we want to have a family, and so that's more important to me than a title or a credit. And if I can, you know, if I can, 10 years down the line, if I can be making characters, if I can be still, you know, providing tools and whatnot for people and making a living doing it, I'll be happy.
That's really refreshing to hear, because, yeah, not a lot of people put a life, you know, real life before animation, before, you know, not just animation, but before their work, because it is such a cutthroat industry, and the minute that you let your guard down, somebody else will be there to take your job, you know. So a lot of people have a fear of always need to be on the, you know, have the edge, always have all the free time. And, you know, to see somebody being successful that actually has, you know, I guess, a real life, number one, and the moral integrity to say, that's what I want this instead, and to see that you actually get to do cool stuff is really refreshing and awesome. So, you know, thank you so much for being an inspiration, everybody. Sure.
Thanks, man. I think it's important that artists have lives. That, you know, our lives inform our art, and if you don't live a life, it's hard to know what, you know, what sadness and what joy feels like as an animator. How can you portray that in the character if you're not feeling that in your own life?
And, yeah, absolutely.
And I mean, as an artist, just in terms of you know, modeling, if you're not out there looking at stuff, and as a lighter, if you're not, you know, examining that in real life, if you're just shut up in your office all the time, it's hard to make that work. I mean, you can do it for a period of time, but you have to come out of it eventually and live life.
What's the quote of Brad Bird? He says, you can't create the illusion of life unless you live it.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah. That's really, really interesting. So would you consider taking storytelling into a different level? Would you ever consider doing like a comic, or, but since you have that traditional art background?
You know, at this point, I go through phases, and I mean, that's when I don't know that I would be successful at a feature film studio, being kind of focused so narrowly on something.
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons I really enjoy commercial work, is that you get to wear different hats, and like, after I've animated a scene for a few weeks, I'm ready for something else. Or I'm ready for the next scene. I'm ready to rig something. I'm ready to model something. I'm ready to, you know, I'm ready for something else. And so, I don't know if that's just, I can't hold my focus that long, but it's just that I like different stuff, and so being able to do that is important to me.
That's really cool, man. Yeah, I think a lot of people feel the same way as you do, but you know, there is a lot of pressure nowadays to focus on one thing and stick with it. You know, a lot of you know, especially a lot of students, their goal is to work at Pixar or something like that, and it's, you know, starting to become, I guess, common knowledge that what they're looking for is specialized people. You only do animation, you only do rigging, and they're not looking for generalists anymore.
Yeah.
And, you know, I definitely think it is important for people to know the process of other things. Absolutely.
Well, and I mean, I think if your sole goal is to work in feature film, then that's probably the way to go, because that's what they're looking for. But,
true, yeah, good point.
In commercial work, especially if you're on site, like, if you're someone who can do multiple things and you do them well, you're going to have all the work that you want.
Yeah.
It's because that's not something that a lot of people pursue or do well. But if you are able to do that and if you enjoy that, then, well, let me say, if that's what you want to do, then maybe feature film isn't the way to go. Because you might not be happy in it. You know, it's, you know, the credit isn't everything. It's, your life is a lot more important. If you're not enjoying it, then what's the point?
Absolutely, yeah. That's very good advice. Okay, animation in general, in terms of the concepts, it's changing considerably fast. You know, all the time there's new stuff coming out. Technology, what even constitutes animation, what it's being used for. Do you see, like, any crazy, I mean, being somebody who is so technically and creatively involved in, you know, kind of on the edge of animation, where do you see it going? I mean, do you have any type of predictions, or do you think that things will kind of stay how they are and technology will change? Or?
You know, that's a really good question. You know, it's really exciting to me to see what people around the world are doing different. Like, when I see a film like last few years especially, like out of Goblins and some of the schools in Europe, you see kind of these paint gobbly films, a really different look. And I've really loved to see that different kind of thing and to see how people have tried to take animation away from the traditional, like, you know, this shade or that shade or kind of thing and treat it as something else. And I hope to see that pushed. And you know, I hope to see, I would really love to see, you know, impressionistic type animation. Like, it's not all in the, you know, weeks of polish kind of thing, but other ways to do things quicker and just to get it out. I mean, that's one of the things is, you know, I have ideas for short films, and I'm just like, I just don't know if I can do another short film of, like, it just takes so much drive and passion of years of work, really, to do a film. And it's just like, I'd rather be doing other stuff. I'd rather be creating the tools. I mean, and that may change in a year, but like, so this year, my goal has been to get my rigging abilities and skills and tools. Like, I've been, you know, I've written thousands of lines of code, all these functions to be able to do the things I want to do rigging wise. And so once I have that base, I can build on that base, but then I can use that to, because I want to rig characters again. So one of my plans is that I want to have a series of characters, but it's going to all be the same kind of rig setup and the same kind of tools, so you know what to expect as an animator if you're getting a rig from this system.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, I think you have done that, you know, for yourself, but also for everybody else, because now if I wanted to make a short film, I have your awesome tool set that I can use as well, which is awesome. I think that's just amazing. One thing I usually ask people when I interview them that, you know, it's towards the end is a segment called Yeah, I'd Animate That, which is, you know, is there a character or something like from a movie or from your imagination or just something that you've always wanted to animate and you just haven't done yet that you've, like, your dream, like, this would be the perfect character?
I don't know about dream, but I, you know, as a kid, I actually wanted to be a zoologist, and so I've been really passionate about animals. And so one of my things that I'd like to do down the road is to do a series of animal-type rigs. And actually, I've been thinking about a series of endangered animals kind of rigs, because that's one of my passions is a way to, you know, to push, you know, knowledge and to not just to make characters for character's sake, but to have a reason for those characters. But I've always, giant otter is my favorite animal, so I've always wanted to.
Giant otter?
Yep.
I haven't even heard of that.
They're from the Amazon, La Lutra.
Very cool.
But, no, but just to make that kind of character, and actually one of my short films revolves around that, and so that's something I would like to do. And but I don't know if we'll get to that, if I'll get to there, but I'd like to get the ability to get to there.
Absolutely. Well, in a way, you're kind of bringing new life into them. Well, I mean, they're not extinct yet, but you're making an awareness of the animal, and you're almost like, you know, creating it in a different world where it can survive and thrive. It's kind of a cool idea. I like that. I just noticed right now that your hair is the same as the default of Morpheus.
Yeah.
Is that on purpose?
No, it's just when that's what you got to look at, that's what you got to look at.
Good point. Good point.
My good friend Dave, I did a version of Morpheus with him a couple weeks ago, and he said, it looks like if you and I had a kid. So, there you go.
So, all right, what projects do you have lined up for the future? I mean, do you have anything that's really exciting? I mean, you're still working with the company out of Houston, correct? And you're doing stuff for them?
Not currently. That's not my current project is with, but we have a good relationship, and I look forward to future projects with them. Like I said, right now, I'm booked through December with the company in Australia.
That's right.
So I'm working on a trailer project with them.
Very cool.
And after that, I really want to get the rigger done, and so I need another probably two and a half months to get the initial push done. So after that, you know, there's a lot of stuff out there, and just we'll see what comes.
Do you see yourself getting into more directorial roles, kind of like what you've been doing lately?
Well, it just depends on the project. You know, I enjoy that, and I love doing the Nintendo project, and but I don't have a problem, you know, working under other folks as well. My buddy Dave, he directed a couple films that I've worked on, and I like working for other people too. I don't have to be, I guess, in charge.
Well, yeah, I mean, you seem like an awesome guy and somebody that I would love to work for. So hopefully one day you'll get to do something. That would be awesome. And I'm sure everybody working under you would love it. But thank you so much again just for everything, for making Morpheus, for doing the interview. And we apologize for the noise. We're actually at Mr. Tramp's bar before the OOGA meetings. And it's really nice of you to come out and do a talk for us here in Austin. I mean, everybody really appreciates what you do, and I hope you understand that.
Well, I appreciate your appreciation.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Yeah, well, it was great talking to you. Thank you so much. Anything else you want to add on the end? We can cut in later. Anything that you wanted to say? Nothing?
Hi, Mom.
There you go. And enjoy your pizza. We don't want that to get cold.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, man. Well, I hope you guys enjoyed the interview. I'm sure you've noticed that he's just one of the nicest, most, you know, sincere guys I have ever met, and I'm sure you guys have picked up on that a little bit. So definitely talk to him, email him, and tell him how much you appreciate him making this awesome rig, this awesome tool, storytelling tool, really. It's not an animation tool, it's a storytelling tool. So definitely say thank you to him for that.
And, you know, use this rig.
Yeah, and use it and enjoy it and make some good animation, because nothing will repay him better than you making something awesome.
I tell you what, make an animation, make it awesome, get it out there, obviously use his rig, and then thank him at the end.
Yeah, and mention the podcast. Also, if you happen to go to Don Hertzfeldt's screenings, mention the podcast then as well. Mention the podcast to anybody, everybody.
We should like put a thing up where we just print flyer, or we just put a PDF of a flyer so people can just bring them wherever they
want. Make them waste their paper?
Yeah, make them waste their paper for us. You guys love us, don't you?
Waste your paper for the Alt Animation Podcast, and tune in for the next one. We've got some really cool interviews lined up. Hopefully, you know, I'll be able to let you guys know who those are later.
It might be Don Hertzfeldt.
It might be Wendy Tilby and Amanda Forbes. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe. All right. See you guys next time.